Hey, everybody.
Hi, guys. Well, from smoggy Salt Lake City, Utah.
It's Thank God I'm Atheist.
The podcast.
I'm Frank Feldman.
And in the red shoes, I'm Dan Beecher.
And coming up today, we're going to be talking about King David.
We are.
I mean Donald Trump.
King Trump. We are going to be talking about the ways, the backbending ways that the evangelical community of the United States of America has tried to make Donald Trump okay.
Yeah. Well, and okay for themselves.
Right. Yeah. Like, because they're not selling him.
I'm not going to buy this argument.
No. But they're trying to sell him to themselves. They're justifying their own horrible behavior.
Yeah. And using the Bible to do so. That seems to be a thing.
They do that a lot.
Never heard of anybody ever using the Bible to justify actions.
No. When would that ever have happened?
Generally understood to be unacceptable.
Impossible.
Anyway. Well, to get us started today, Dan.
Yeah.
I've got a story of a train.
Choo-choo.
Yeah, basically.
I love it.
High-speed rail. Coming to Israel.
Are they going to call it Israel? That's where they should have gone. Idiots. They probably didn't.
I'm sure they didn't. Oh, God, Dan. A train.
Yeah.
High-speed rail line, is soon to open between Tel Aviv.
And Jerusalem?
And Jerusalem.
Okay.
And they are wanting to run an additional tunnel that would actually go under the old city and have a big train station at the Western Wall.
Oh, okay.
Which, not for nothing, they want to name Donald Trump Station.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Because of,
I know why. I mean, it's obvious. The man has basically just gotten down on his hands and knees and sucked their dick is what he's done.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he's.
I mean, he's basically shit on the entire international community that has been working tirelessly to try and find solutions to the conflicts that have been happening in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. And he's like, he hasn't listened to anybody about it, and he's just decided that...
Well, and
he's listened to Netanyahu.
Yeah.
And that's it.
And he effectively took the United States out of any sort of... We are no longer at the negotiation table here.
No.
Like, the Palestinians will have absolutely nothing to do with us as mediators in the whole thing. So, well done.
Yeah.
Well done, Trump. But regardless of all of that, this tunnel that would be dug under the old city is rife with controversy.
Well.
Because, this is an old, thousands of years old city.
Yeah, one would think that they'd bump into a few archaeological things.
Yeah, and so it's these kind of tunnels are, you either have to go really deep.
Right.
Or you're going to be bumping into stuff. And then you have to call down the archaeologists. The archaeologists have to figure out are we going to move this thing? Are we going to excavate it?
Right.
Do we need to change the route of the tunnel? La la la.
Maybe what they do, they just plow through,
mm-hmm.
screw up whatever they screw up,
mm-hmm.
and then the demarcation Donald Trump station makes even more sense.
It's a fitting name.
They just don't pay any attention to anything.
Building the line.
They just hear that there's an idea to like make a tunnel, and they're like, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Let's just plow it in and not pay any attention to anything and not care.
Yeah.
And then it's like perfect.
Yeah. While it will not be going directly under the, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre or whatever it's called. This is causing quite a stir because it will be going near, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre.
Yeah.
And which of course is, That's where Jesus Christ was crucified and buried, I guess.
Theoretically.
Or where he was buried after he was crucified. But the Palestinians have a real problem with that route for some reason. I don't fully get the connection there.
It's probably where half of their tunnels are popping up from their own, from their, no, there are actually tunnels.
I know.
From the Gaza Strip into anywhere.
Nonetheless, causing quite the stir.
Yeah.
For obviously a lot of different reasons.
Not the least of which
political reasons and
nothing
archaeological reasons.
Nothing that isn't owned by him should have the Trump name on it.
Well, first of all, he might object to it. They might need to license his name. That's what he does.
It's got to be in gold. You got to the title. The name's got to be in gold. The entire station's got to be inlaid in gold, covered in gold. The toilets, gold.
Where's the casino?
This is going to be the most luxurious station in the Middle East.
Yeah. So there's that.
Oh my God. Donald J. Trump. All right. I'm going to move to Southern Utah / Texas. Homes of the FLDS.
Oh, that's the connection. Yeah,
Church.
That makes sense. Okay.
A very large sweeping lawsuit has been filed.
Oh.
Charging the leaders of the FLDS religion.
Uh-huh.
These are the polygamist people who are still polygamist even after the mainstream Mormon church long had abandoned it.
Exactly, yeah.
This is the Warren Jeffs group, for those who don't remember. Well, it turns out that polygamy is not the only thing that they've been up to.
Uh-huh.
The charges are pretty horrific. These are charges of child molestation. Now, we knew that they were marrying children. They were marrying girls as young as 14, possibly younger.
Right.
They're a very secretive group. It's very cultish, and they don't let outsiders know about anything.
Right.
Now it turns out that they were doing ritual sexual abuse in their temples of children as young as 8.
No.
Ritually, they were being... Like, it's horrible.
How does this not come out sooner?
I don't know, other than they're very effective at stifling communication with the outside world.
Wow.
The plaintiff, who I think is unnamed in this, it started for her when she was 8 years old. She's the woman that's blowing the whistle on this thing. They would put a bag over her head and take her to an undisclosed location.
Mm.
They say sometimes this happened in their temples. This happened all over the place. But they would take her to an undisclosed location, call her by a number when they got her there.
Oh, my God.
Obviously, because they can't... They were doing something inhuman, so they dehumanized her.
Right.
And then ritually sexually abused her in front of other men, with other men. Oftentimes, they would record these sessions to show other members of the church.
Oh, my God.
And then when she finally turned 14, she was forced to be a witness and a scribe about this. This became part of their church. This was a church activity. Warren Jeff's dad, I think, was the one who started it. But they've been doing it for...
Rulin.
They've been doing it for decades.
Wow.
And at the age of 16... This plaintiff was forced to attend ladies' classes that seemed to be about preparing her to be a good wife, but also included acts of sexual abuse.
My God.
So, yeah, the polygamy thing was kind of cute and all, but it's gotten... That's about as dark as it can go.
Yeah.
I suddenly don't... It takes on a very different tenor, and I have very little funny to say about it. But.
Yeah, I remember this actually, when they confiscated all the property, I remember seeing something on the news where they were like going through a house that was supposedly Warren Jeff's house.
Right.
And there was basically all they could figure was that this is the soundproof area.
Oh.
Right? There were these inner rooms that with very thick walls, and they figured that they were like for sexual purposes. But this really blows the lid off of that and explains the, what was really going on.
Right. Because like, I mean, if it's just like, I don't want the other wives to hear what I do with wife number three, that's one thing.
Right. But that's, you put a room on the other side of the house.
Right.
That's not you build an inner sanctum that's soundproof.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you can keep your voices down, but, right. but you know, if both parties are consensual, but if yeah. somebody might be screaming or.
And that's the other thing. Like to me, I've never had a problem with somebody being married to multiple people. If everybody consents, if right. they're all adults and everybody consents, I have no problem with polygamy as a concept. The way it's practiced by religions usually is it's a form of oppression of women.
Right. Absolutely.
And I have a problem with that.
Yeah.
But if everybody's entering into it willingly and knowingly and happily, then I'm fine with it, with the concept of polygamy. But this is a very different thing.
Yeah.
And this is so wow. they're not fun anymore for me. They've ruined all the fun. Because before it was just you make
Thanks,
fun of them.
Jeffs.
You make fun of them because they got the dumb dresses and the bad hair and, you know, the polygamy thing is kind of cute and whatever, but no, yeah. now it's all ruined. I'm mad.
I'm sorry, Dan.
Yeah, move on before we have 22 minutes without a joke.
Well, I don't know how much more, what kind of joking we can do about this topic.
Oh, now. good. We're going to just keep it dark.
It's very serious.
Okay.
This is the story. Let's back up just a little bit. You'll recall after Donald Trump was elected president,
uh-huh.
that President Macron of France.
Oh, yes.
He issued an invite to the climate scientists of America.
Oh, right.
And said, come.
Come live in France. We believe in this.
Work in France. We will support your work.
Yeah.
And you can just... visas are taken care of. Just right. come on over, right?
Yeah.
So far, 18 U.S. scientists that we know of have taken up his offer.
Okay.
I came across this interview with one of them, a woman by the name of Camille Parmesan.
Okay.
It sounds... I had to say her last name as quickly as possible because... I don't like the last name Parmesan. I don't know why. There's a really bad cheese. Anyway.
Yes. That's just the Americanized version of the name Parmigiano.
Yes, but it's...
No, it's a cheese.
It's your
name
dried
is,
out.
Your name is cheese. Your name is a cheese.
Anyway, she's a biologist at the universities of Texas and Plymouth in the UK.
Mm.
She's considered one of the world's most influential climate change scientists.
Oh, wow.
She has worked with on the issue of butterflies and how they are affected by climate change across all the continents.
Mm.
This interview was
she's
was
a lepidopterist.
That is correct. That is a word that is used in this article. Some interesting things come out. One of the questions that was asked, and this was in The Guardian, if anybody wants to look it up, is there any difference between public attitudes to climate change in the U.S. and the U.K.? She's been in Plymouth for a little while, so
right.
that's what they're asking about. She says average citizens in the U.K. are much better informed about
okay.
issues, more science knowledgeable, and more likely to want to see policies based on the best science available than is the average U.S. public. This is the interesting part. This was not always the case. Science historically has played a strong role in U.S. policies, and there was a bipartisan respect of scientific findings.
Yeah,
I've seen this erode over the past 30 years, and really don't know how this or why this has happened.
Ooh! I know, I know.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh, let's hear your theory, Dan.
Jesus.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's Jesus.
Yeah. I mean, I can't even believe that she would
She can't see it. She can see
it. Yeah, you gotta know that it's playing the evangelicals have inserted themselves into Republican politics,
right?
And have and wield so much control and power,
and they've made it a specific point of their belief system.
Yeah.
Both as a group of Christian believers and as a political bloc,
right.
That science is bullshit because right. Jesus.
Right. They're science deniers.
Right.
Which is a terrifying, terrifying position to take.
And that didn't used and to the, be how they were. That no. was just, that was just, they were carefully guided to that place so that they could, so that they could get, so that their leaders could get political power, etc.
Yeah. She says some really terrifying things about the climate. I'll leave that out. But basically, the gist of it is that things that they were sort of theorizing on 20 to 30 years ago are just so solid now.
Okay,
science
right.
behind it is irrefutable.
It's undeniable.
There's so much evidence.
I mean, you can be a denier, but it's still undeniable.
It's sure. Cute. but the thing that she's found the most surprised, or that is the most surprising, she says, I am shocked at the ubiquitousness of climate change. We are seeing change on in every country and every ocean. That is what surprises biologists. All regions studied are being impacted. Every group of animal and plant, from the oak tree to birds, is being impacted. All groups are showing change. We would expect to find some regions or groups which are stable, but to date we are not. We're seeing climate change happen much faster than I thought it would 10 years ago.
Now,
so
there is a counterpoint to that, which is that, as Donald Trump recently pointed out in a tweet... It is cold in some places.
It's cold.
So
yeah,
like unusually.
Well done.
It's been unusually cold sometimes in a few places. So
right. Well done.
Tell that to the butterflies.
Yeah. Did you see the actual? I forget who penned the response, but they were trying to explain it back to him in terms he might understand, which is a billionaire who happens to have no money in his wallet one day is not suddenly poor. Likewise, a poor man who has a windfall of a couple hundred dollars is not suddenly rich.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And which I thought was a really, like, it's great to throw it back to
right.
him that
yeah,
way.
Yeah.
Of course, he still won't get it or no. care. Or, and actually, the most terrifying thing about Donald Trump is he probably actually believes in climate change.
Or he actually... Here's what I genuinely believe about Donald Trump. Whatever he's saying in this moment right now, he believes 100%. Because whatever fact comes...
Fair enough.
The fact that it's coming out of his face makes it true.
Makes it so. Yeah.
So, like, I think you could show him all the facts on climate change, and he could say, oh, I believe you. I'm a climate change guy now.
Right.
And then 5 minutes later, he could be like, nah, it feels cold. I don't believe in climate change. And both things would be true for him.
Well, anyway,
I
thought that was important just to follow up on that. We are losing scientists.
Yeah.
We're losing, you know.
We're kind of losing right now.
We are just losing.
But, you know, who knows?
We will win again.
we will triumph.
America will rise again.
Americans will eventually believe in science again when everything's broken and we're like, who can save us?
Well, but here's also the thing. If we go back to, you know, climate change, that we do have obviously some problems at the federal level
right
now. But we have states that are taking up the initiative. Jerry Brown in California.
Yes.
For one, the governor of California is pushing California to still be in compliance with the Paris accord, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And we have major corporations in the United States who are pledging to do their best
right.
to reduce their emissions and their impact on the climate and everything.
Right.
And so we're seeing both the private sector and some states doing their part. It sucks that the federal government is saying that they're not going to.
Right.
But
there you go.
Yeah.
I'm going to take us to, so back in October, I don't even know if we caught this one, but a website launched called churchclarity.org. And basically what this was is it's an LGBT, they look at churches, the major churches of the United States of America, and whether or not they're LGBT affirming.
Yes.
And they report it.
Yes. And we did talk about it.
Okay. I don't listen to the show. I don't know what we do.
Is there an update?
There's an update. They have just released a new report. This is their first big report.
Oh, great.
This is a report that has examined the top 100 churches in the United States.
Okay.
They've been publishing scores for different congregations. So they've got like 500 congregations that they've published scores for.
And that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about churches. We're not talking about like the Baptist Church. We're talking about individual congregations of the Baptist Church.
Yeah, I guess Methodist so. Church, I mean, yeah. Whatever. So like mega churches count, but like it's not religion. It's churches.
Right.
So
right.
Top 100 largest churches in the United States of America.
Okay.
And this report talked about percentages. It talked about, for instance, their percentage of the top 100 largest churches that are LGBT affirming. Would you like to take a guess?
The percentage of them that are LGBT. Well, mega churches. Probably conservative in general, but there's got to be a couple of them that are cool. I don't know, 20%.
0% of America's largest churches are LGBT affirming.
Okay, but how are they defining affirming?
Well,
because
so
the Joel Osteens of the world aren't going to say boo about anybody.
Well, what
does he actually say negative things about gay people?
He refuses to talk about it.
But, so he's not affirming.
So he's not affirming.
Okay.
Great. For the most part, he may have had some quotes. I don't know. But at least one time when I looked him up, he basically, like somebody interviewing him was trying to nail him down. And he gave this sort of vague, God loves all his chillens sort of answer.
Right.
So that's kind of where I've seen him fall.
Okay.
But those people do not qualify as LGBTQ affirming. Only 35% of these churches even have clear policies. And 54% actually hide their positions.
Yeah, like, of course they do.
Like, it's tricky. A few of them may be quietly okay with the gays, but that is very different than being affirming of the gays.
Right. Yeah, that is.
Now, this.
But these are, we're talking about big business here.
Yeah.
These mega churches, this is business. People are getting rich off these things.
Oh, yeah.
So they're going to be run like American companies are run, which is unless you're like, you know, most American companies don't really come out with a statement about LGBT issues.
Although some very prominent big companies have released ads that are LGBT affirming.
I guess that's true.
They've done, you know,
true.
It's really starting to happen. As a matter of fact, some of them do have very explicit policies about like we welcome LGBTQ people.
I wonder if it's runs in about the same percentage, around 35%.
Yeah, I wonder. Who knows?
Because, I mean, I guess corporate America is pretty open these days.
For the most part.
I guess so.
You're not your Hobby Lobby or your Chick-fil-A, but you know.
Right. Yeah, I guess that's probably true.
There were some other stats that were of interest. Considering that African-American people or people of color compose about 40% of the United States population as a whole, and considering that people of color tend to be very religious in these United States, would you care to guess what percentage of America's top 100 churches are led by a white pastor?
Over 90.
93%.
Okay.
Seven of the top 100 churches in the country are led by a person of color.
Yeah.
That is nuts to me.
Do they have membership stats?
No, that was not part of this particular report. This was just sort of talking about who the pastors are and and whether and what their position is on the LGBTQ thing.
Okay, interesting.
One other thing. How many of America's top 100 largest churches have a female pastor? Not even led by, but have a female pastor.
Oh, have a female pastor. Led by would probably be extremely low. Have female pastors is probably, I don't know, there's probably 20 to 30%.
One. There's one.
Not even a female, not even, no, that doesn't make sense.
I don't know. I mean, that's what it says here. Yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, cool.
Yeah.
I guess so. I guess, I don't know.
Who knows?
So these are pretty conservative things.
Yeah, I mean, this
these
is...
These mega churches,
these huge, giant churches, you know, with thousands of people in their congregation, looking to those old white men for their salvation.
I just don't get it.
Well, yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Obviously. But no, just like going to an arena church.
Oh,
I don't
yeah.
get it. What could be great about that?
Well,
you are so unimportant to that congregation.
Yeah, but you go to one of those little churches and you feel like this is too small. This can't be real. This one can't be right. It's just there's only 85 people here. They can't have it right. But you go to like Osteen, the former Houston Rockets arena or whatever, and you sit down with 20,000 people. You're going to feel like, they can't be wrong. This many people in one place believe in this? They can't be wrong.
Yeah, I guess so. Anyway. All right, Dan. I got a story of the Twin Cities Archdiocese.
Oh.
The Archdiocese of St. Paul in Minneapolis.
Okay.
Which has been stuck in bankruptcy proceedings. Because they've been, they were sued.
Oh yeah, they've been paying out.
Yeah, by victims of priest
sexual abuse.
Yeah, right? And so they had to declare bankruptcy because they didn't have the money on hand. Blah blah blah. Well, so they're trying to come to some sort of settlement. They've been in court with a bankruptcy judge. And so the diocese has their proposal.
Uh-huh.
And the victims have their proposal.
Sure.
And they're very different proposals.
Really? Weird. Why would that happen?
Apparently the archdiocese has been able to put together a fund of more than $155 million. To pay out to victims.
Okay.
So if there
were only 150 victims, that would seem like it was fine.
Probably. That one would guess, right?
Yeah.
I don't have a number as to how many people have a claim to this fund. That's
right.
Not in this article.
Right.
However, the issue that the victims are having is that the bulk of that money is coming from insurance payments.
Oh.
And they want the archdiocese to actually have a little bit of skin in the game.
Right.
They want them to hurt, right? They want they've been asking for the contributions from the archdiocese to be increased to $80 million.
Okay.
Which would require the archdiocese to sell off property.
Oh.
All right. No.
Wouldn't that be so sad?
That would just be the worst.
If they actually felt the pinch.
It would just be the worst.
It's not fair. They're people of God.
Last year, U.S. bankruptcy judge Robert Kressel declined to include parishes and other church properties. But they're now going back to the drawing board. And they are trying to expedite this process. So there's still no resolution on it. But I thought it was an interesting development that the judge is actually promising this will be a much speedier resolution now.
But now everything's back on. But now the property's back in the kitty.
I think that's what it sounds like.
Okay.
Is that they're actually going to be looking at property.
Okay.
Which they should, for Christ's sake.
Like, yeah.
But here's also the thing that I don't get, which is I feel like the Vatican should be forced to pony up some money.
There's a parent corporation here.
Right.
That is doing okay.
Right. And the Vatican is the organization that puts the bishop and the archbishop. Well, it puts the archbishop in place,
right?
For sure. I don't know exactly how all of this works, but if the Vatican is choosing the archbishop to control something, doesn't that imply that they must have some responsibility in this whole thing?
You'd think so, but legally, if the archdiocese is set up in a. But if you make it hurt enough for the archdiocese, theoretically, the Vatican will step in and save them. One would imagine. Anyway,
who knows how all this works.
But kill them.
I say go after the fucking Vatican.
Go get them.
For Christ's sake.
Well,
they're sitting on some... Sell off some relics.
Right? Right? Sell off a painting. You'll be fine.
One painting.
Yeah.
I've been through that museum at the Vatican. Holy crap.
Yep.
Guaranteed something by Michelangelo. Would pull down some serious money.
Yeah.
This whole thing could be done.
It could be all over. Just sell off.
The Pietà. Sell off the Pietà.
Oh, yeah. You sell that thing off? Some Koch brother will now have a Michelangelo in his living room.
Yeah.
Something like that.
All right.
All right. I'm back to Utah now, where an elementary school teacher was fired recently.
Okay.
This is up in the Cache Valley area of Utah, up in that northern region.
Okay.
He's an artist. Mateo Rueda is his name. Studied art in college.
Yeah.
And it was teaching his elementary school students about art. And he managed to, here's what he was doing. He went to the school library.
Okay.
And got a pack of like 100 paintings. It's like postcards.
Little flashcards.
Yeah. Little cards of 100 different paintings.
Okay.
He was trying to teach them about, colors and stuff.
Oh.
I think this was... These were young students. Kindergarten? I'm not sure.
Okay.
But early students. And when they opened them up, and they said, there was like 100 different cards, so he hadn't gone through them all.
Okay.
Some of them had naked ladies on them.
Oh, no.
And...
Oh, what happened?
Parents flipped out.
Did the children turn into sex fiends?
They all became...
Turned into a giant orgy in this classroom.
Now they're all smoking the reefer. They're just... They've turned to a life of sin and crime. Or one of them told their parent and just said, ha-ha, I saw boobies, and the parent flipped the fuck out. And...
Good Lord.
It became all over...
Oh, my God.
For Mr. Rueda.
They fired him?
They fired the guy. They put him on a leave at first, and then they fired the guy, which is crazy. One parent claimed that their child felt belittled. They're claiming that he was really fired for what happened afterwards, which was basically... Well, this parent claims that he told the child to grow up and there's nothing wrong with girl parts and you just need to grow up and be more mature about it. And then the kid felt belittled by that, the kid needed to grow up.
Yeah.
It
sounds like the parents need to grow up too.
Very much so.
Like.
Very much so.
Sounds like the adult here. Very clearly was the teacher.
Right.
The only adult in the...
A couple of parents have jumped in to his defense.
Okay.
But we're talking about a very Mormon community, a very very religious and conservative community.
Oh, yeah.
But when art, I mean, I've looked at the paint, some of the paintings in question.
What were they?
Well, there's one that's just a figurative nude. It's just a nude woman.
Okay.
And then there's another one that's like, and it's just her sort of facing forward, a little bit of pubic hair showing. But just a just a normal, just a, quite a nice nude woman.
Sure.
and then there's another one that has a woman with her butt up, uncovered, lying on a bed.
Oh.
And the rest of her is clothed, like the top half of her is clothed. It's a very strange painting.
Okay.
That one is actually a little, it's not lascivious by any means, but it's a little more, a little more titillating, I think. Well,
suggestive, maybe?
Because what is she doing? Why is your butt showing when the rest of you is covered up?
Right, but that's where you go. Right. Elementary school kids are like, her butt's in the air.
Right, she's just, it's just a butt.
Right.
So.
That's amazing.
They saw a butt, they saw some boobs, whatever.
I'm so glad I didn't grow up in an area with those sort of, I just feel like, I don't know.
Basically, like, the complaint came in that he was showing them pornography.
Of course he was. Yeah.
Pornography.
Of course, and of course that was the complaint.
Now, what's weird is that...
Because that's what teachers do.
Right.
You know?
Right.
He pulled out his hustlers and...
Right, exactly.
Okay, kids, gather around. I need you to see some good nudes here. We're going to be drawing... We're going to be sketching...
Matter of fact, let me pull up the internet here.
Body.
I'm gonna call up some videos. You're going to like these ones.
Right. Yeah, that's not what this was.
No.
And it sounds like a really, like, innocent accident.
They were and in the school's
it
library.
It was in the school library. Like, it should be the librarian losing her job.
Right? Or something. Job. Or everybody grow up and it's nobody losing their job because your kids can see naked people and that's fine.
It's no big fucking deal.
It's shocking to me. Yeah. A couple of the paintings in question, by the way, are Iris Tree by Modigliani.
Oh.
And Odalisque. By François Boucher.
Right. Yeah, I had this really funny interview on my mission with the mission president. It was probably 6 months into my mission.
Yeah.
Right. And out of the blue, I don't know if he was confusing me with another missionary or not, but he asks me, and how are you doing with pornography? And I said, pornography? What pornography? And he goes, you know, the billboards. Because in Italy, advertisements will often have a naked woman on them.
Yeah.
Right? There'll be a topless woman.
Sure.
On some billboard advertising whatever.
Which would have stirred you up. So.
Oh, boy, I know. I barely noticed. I mean, I noticed the United Colors of Benetton
The United
ads.
Boobs of Benetton?
Yeah, because there were boobs everywhere. There was also one of two, a horse mounting another horse.
Oh, my.
That was... very, you know, provocative.
Yeah, I guess.
Because let's go buy clothes at the...
Let's go buy clothes because we... but I can't buy their clothes. They're supporting horse sex?
I know. It was really funny.
Very weird.
And so, you know, and I remember one where there was like a baby and there was a boob on each side of its head. Right?
Sure.
And just United Colors of Benetton. And then there were other billboards.
So
but
porn.
Anyway, so, but that was pornography.
Right, of course.
And so he's like, yeah, you know, the billboards and the, you know, advertisements that are all around in this country. And I was like, I'm fine. I was like, no, that doesn't bother me at all.
How are you doing with the porn, weirdo?
You know, like at museums when you see the statues.
Right.
You know.
He didn't actually say that.
No.
Oh,
no,
my gosh.
No. Clearly, no.
The first time I went to Europe, I was a very young tyke.
Right.
8, I think.
Oh, wow.
Maybe 10.
That's brave of your parents.
Yeah, well, yeah.
It was traveling to Europe with children.
Probably idiotic of them, but it was lovely for me.
Right.
But one of the first things that happens, we get there, we were in Munich. I remember this distinctly, and it's sort of become a thing of family lore. Well, the way my parents always told the story was, My dad and my sister and I walked to see the Glockenspiel in Munich.
Okay.
And walked back to the... We had tried to see it the day before and had missed the big... Uh-huh. It, you know, it's a clock that has all of these sort of mechanical things that happen.
Right.
Little people that dance about.
Mm-hmm.
And we had missed it the day before. We had gone there, gone back to the hotel. So anyway, we had gone again the next day. Somehow I had gotten separated from my dad.
Oh, boy.
I just walked back to the hotel.
Okay.
My mom came out and saw me and went, "Oh, my God, what are you doing here without your dad? Where's your dad? Where's your sister?" And I was like, She was like, "Stay right here." And she went off and found them and then brought them all back.
Oh, okay. All right.
The reason that I did not give at the time for my being lost is that on the way there, on the way back, and on the way there again, I had seen this little porn shop, which had all of these little boobies hanging out and stuff, and I was excited. There were pictures all over that place that I had never seen before. So on the way back, I was not paying attention to my dad and my sister at all. I was just looking, where is this place? Where is this porn place? Where's the porn shop? And then I looked around and was like,
"You were
eight? Fuck. Oh, yeah.
Little pervy Dan.
Oh, yeah." That's why I got lost in Germany.
This is boobs.
Boobs.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're lucky you didn't serve a mission in Italy.
Right?
Because the mission president would ask you how you doing with porn. You were like, oh.
I would have been like, I
can't believe it.
I just dropped trow in front of an ad. I couldn't help it. Started going to town in front of a billboard.
Yeah.
No. I think it would have been fine.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh. You'd collected yourself by the age of 19.
Well, I mean, I would have looked.
Right.
That's for sure.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Good. So, good for you. Yeah.
Right. Anyway, hey, you guys, if you have stories about your own run-ins with
boobs,
artistic pornography, or anything like that, you can write into us, podcast@thankgodimatheist.com.
Or call and leave us a voicemail. You can do so. The telephone number is 424-666-8442.
Yeah, that's the devil's number, y'all. Go to the Facebook page, facebook.com/TGIAtheist, and click that like button.
And while you're there, search for the TGIA Members Only Lounge and request to join. It's a closed group, but we'll let you in.
Yes, indeed.
Dan.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Baker.
You know?
He's
a classic.
He has become the best replacement for Pat.
Where has Patty Boy been?
He's old. He's old. His crazy is waning.
Well, or it's just gotten... He's gone over the edge to, like, unusable.
Yeah, so...
But Jim Baker, man...
He's become the new gift that keeps on giving.
He's...
anyway.
I'm tempted to buy a bucket. I'm just tempted.
Oh, God, no. No.
Don't know that I could
cannot
do
support the man in any way, shape,
or form.
Well,
that's true.
He's obsessed with this idea of the left wanting to kill.
Oh, they're out
the
to
right.
Get everybody.
And he uses the word kill, and I think it's an amazing thing. And
he
so
his whole thing is like predicated. I mean, because his business model is disaster preparedness.
Yeah.
Everything has to be apocalyptic with this guy.
Yeah.
It is happening. They are coming. The bad guys are going. The war is on its way.
Yeah.
And so here's the latest installment in the war on buckets.
There's people today. They have gotten their way. And they have beat back all opposition. They've changed America. But the only thing they can't change is this.
Mm-hmm.
Amen.
The warfare is against the God of heaven, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the God whose son is Jesus Christ. I'm serious. You have no idea. I can't even talk about it because they will kill me. And I don't care what you say. I know what I'm talking about. They've already threatened my life. Because they disagree with the Bible, and the Christians are stubborn, they think. They don't think we're faithful. They think we're too stupid to be faithful. Mm-hmm. They think we're nuts. And so we believe this. Listen to me, you don't get this yet. Some of you do. A couple in this room understand what I'm saying. The only thing they can't beat, they want everything. They changed America. Mm-hmm. They changed the morals of America. They changed everything about America. They got control. But we just elected a president. Mm-hmm. The evangelical vote elected the president.
They elected him. He got elected by the evangelicals.
Yeah.
I want to know when we took over. I want to know when we got all of this power that he's talking about.
Well, I mean,
because
we did win on a couple issues.
We did. Yes, that's true. The LGBTQ thing seems to be going our way.
Well, I mean, we got gay marriage.
Yeah.
Right. And that's very upsetting.
Right. That's very upsetting. Women still seem to be able to make decisions about their own bodies sometimes, right. Which is really depressing.
Right. And that's of course been their real rallying cry for a long time. The fact that we change, everybody changes America. America's always,
it's supposed to change.
Everything is always changing.
Right.
Right. Like,
yeah.
Like, what kind of weird little static world do they want to live in where
what's
nothing
funny is,
changes?
What's funny is that, like, 100 years ago, he might be railing against how the left has won on this whole slavery thing.
Right.
Or, you know, 150 years ago. But now, the same guy who's like, oh, they're infecting us with their morals, right, would totally be like, yeah, and slavery was bad. So it's just, you know, there's all of these people who, you know, the whole conservative line is keep it as it is.
Right.
And then 20, 30, 50 years later, everybody has accepted the new things from that era.
Right.
And they're saying keep it as it is, but keep it as it is now.
Right.
Changes, we now realize that, yes.
It's about what's comfortable.
Jim Crow laws were bad, and so we now realize that.
It's what you're used to.
But keep it, but don't change things now. We can't accept gays. We accepted the blacks. Can't we just leave it at that? Can we call it a day?
It's what's new and makes you uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Right. And and so, yeah, right. I mean, in 20, 30 years, they'll have found some things to be comfortable on.
Yeah.
Not everything, though.
No.
Because they're still not cool with, they never got used to abortion.
No. But that may change. I have no predictions anymore. I'll just watch how it goes. I'm an observer now, not a predictor.
Yeah. But we clearly the entire left wants to kill.
Well, they're going to kill him. They're going to kill everybody. He can't even say the thing
that he wants to say.
Because they'll kill him. Because,
dude, you're clearly saying whatever you want.
You're saying all of the things.
Right.
You're obviously saying all of the things.
You either are completely delusional or you know how to work up your audience.
I'm not sure that that's an either or scenario. I think that could be a both. I think he might be on a both.
I guess there are degrees.
There are degrees. Hey, we had some folks write into us, or we had a folk write into us.
Oh.
This is from Dean, who says, "Hey, Frank. Hey, Dan. I've been listening. Greetings from Nashville. I'm in the middle of listening to the last episode of TGIA, and I wanted to let you know that there are indeed depictions of Mary breastfeeding the infant Jesus.
Oh, really?
You remember you and I had talked about how, like, that would be the right way to depict Mary and Jesus. Like,
yes.
Not her hovering.
Well, I think
three
there was
steps
also
back from the manger or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But we also had, like, depictions of Mary. We suggested depictions of Mary where she's just lactating from
just boobs.
Just right. No infant attached.
Maybe just a statue where boobs are just sort of shooting out milk or whatever. Anyway, he says, most of these seem to have been produced in the 12th or 13th century. There are also depictions from around the same time of Jesus spraying his blood on his mother at the crucifixion.
I've seen those. Yeah.
I'm not an art historian, he says, but these exchanges of bodily fluids, one natural, the other decidedly less so, seem specific to the Middle Ages, as if some high-ranking church official got wind of them and told the artists to knock it off.
Interesting.
And he attached some very interesting photos that he had taken when he was in Florence, Italy.
Oh.
Of some of these depictions of those exact things.
Triptychs, probably.
Oh, yeah, mate. You get a lot of those.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Dip and triptychs.
Yes.
Altar pieces.
Sure.
Is what they were.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But yeah, very interesting stuff. And yes, you see, and what's interesting is Mary is fully clothed in all of them.
Uh-huh.
And then just a little window open for the boob to come out and feed Jesus.
Interesting.
Which it seems, I mean, you know, obviously these are Europeans depicting Europeans doing the thing that was done in, that was theoretically done
in their time.
But they're trying to depict an event that happened, you know,
right,
thousands of years before.
But they dress that event up in their current
thing.
Clothing,
right.
And
yeah, because I doubt that
not.
The clothing was looked like that in, you know, in ancient.
Oh, decidedly not.
Middle East.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks for writing in, Dean. That was lovely. And a good thing to point out. And I think that we should all just, that's how we should think of Mary.
As you know, lactating Mary.
Tits out. That's how it should be. We've had some people, we've got some folks to thank.
We do have people to thank. Do you want to thank yours first?
Yeah, I'm going to launch in first with, we have a new, PayPal subscriber.
Fantastic.
So, we'll remind our listeners that there are multiple ways, you know, we're still doing the Patreon thing has been, the problems have theoretically been fixed, but
yeah.
Every now and then, if you want to, you can still, be a patron, on PayPal. So thanks to Denise for her contribution.
That's
there.
That's really nice of her. Like you said, we also have Patreon up and running.
Yep.
And I have four people to thank this week. New donors.
Okay.
New supporters on Patreon. We have two new faithful listeners, Dean and Daw. And we have two new venerable listeners.
Lovely.
Malcolm and Jennifer. So thank you, guys.
And blessings be upon ye.
Yeah.
All of ye.
Yeah. And of course, as always, our top donor,
our Lord and Savior, is Angela.
Angela!
Angela! Our who hasn't seen any competition for a while? There was a horse race for a minute there.
There was a minute. Yeah.
And then Angela just took it over.
And she owns that thing.
She's loving it. I wonder if she wears her Pope hat around.
I hope so.
Hopefully she's a Pope hat wearing motherfucker.
I hope that sincerely.
That's one of the things one of the perks that you can get as one of our high-end donors.
Yeah. So thank you so much. Thanks to everybody who continues to support the show.
Yeah.
We can't do it without you.
It's
if you'd like to join them, please visit our website, thankgodimatheist.com, and click on the support tab. And you'll find your options there.
It makes all of this possible.
Indeed. Thanks so much. Dan.
Yeah. Here we go.
We've been a little Trump heavy, but let's get in.
We've gone political on this episode,
yeah.
And that's fine. You know, yeah. I'm okay with our listeners being conservative.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have no I have no beef with people who are intelligent thinkers who differ from me on how our political how our government should be run.
Absolutely. Yeah.
If you're a Trump supporter, I'm fine with losing you as a fucking listener because. Frankly, this man is awful.
You,
this man should not be the president of anything.
I don't think we probably have many Trump listeners, Trump supporters left anymore.
No.
I think we had a couple.
Maybe.
During the election we did.
Yeah, well.
So we heard from them. But yeah, I don't know how. But anyway, that's beside the point.
But there are people who work very hard to justify their support of Donald John Trump.
Right. And my guess is if
you are a supporter of Donald Trump and you're still listening, this is not how you justified your support.
No, no. If you're
what
our
we're
listener,
about to explain right now
is how these
has nothing to do with you.
Like, okay, so you think about you think about conservative Christians, mm-hmm. family values Christians.
Yes,
these are how these people describe themselves. So when you look at a Donald Trump
right.
character, a man who has openly bragged about affairs that he's attempted to have,
uh-huh.
about grabbing women by the pussy,
right.
who has been accused credibly by many women
right.
of sexual abuse of them.
How do you
square that circle? There's a problem fundamentally with these people who want to vote for that guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, Roy Moore, the same question.
Right.
He did lose, Roy Moore, but only by just
1.5%.
Tiniest hair.
Yeah.
So plenty of people voted for that guy, too. Well, how do you justify that?
Huh?
There's
a formula for
there. There are some people. There are some ways that it is done. I think most famously, one of the ways is, and it was best brought up by, I think it was, do I have it here?
It was Jerry Falwell,
I think I got it. Falwell said that somewhere along here, he said, here's what Falwell said when he was endorsing Donald Trump. God called King David a man after God's own heart, even though he was an adulterer and a murderer. You have to choose the leader that would make the best king or president, not necessarily someone who would be a good pastor. We're not voting for pastor in chief.
Yeah, good point. Also a good point, God would have no problem with an adulterer and a murderer because God is both.
Because God is...
Their God is both.
Their God.
Their God screwed around with Mary.
Yeah.
Got her pregnant.
Yeah.
And he...
And you want to talk about...
Countless murders.
Prolific murder.
Yeah.
Just...
Ridiculous.
Sodom and Gomorrah, thousands of people, everybody on earth during the whole Noah incident.
So, yeah. So no problem with King David.
Right.
That makes sense.
The story... Now, I want to remind our listeners, if they're not aware of the story of King David... Who did, you know, and we're not going to go into the whole Goliath thing.
Right. But it is the same David.
This is the same guy.
It later becomes
King
David.
He did distinguish himself both with his lyre playing, apparently was a fantastic harpist.
Oh, yeah.
And with his ability to kill a giant with a rock and a slingshot.
Fantastic, man.
Good for you. Really, I mean, what could be a better recommendation for a kingdom?
Clearly.
Then, you know, the ability to kill a big guy with a rock.
Got shit done.
The story that that Mr. Falwell is referencing is about David and Bathsheba. David has sent a bunch of his people off to war, including the husband of a lady named Bathsheba.
Uh-huh.
So David's chilling on his porch, had just gotten up from his couch after an afternoon.
Uh-huh.
He had been lounging.
As you do, took a little nap.
Walked out on his roof, was looking out over the city, saw a lady taking a bath.
Ooh.
Bathsheba. Yeah. She puts the bath in Bathsheba. Saw her bathing, sent somebody to go get her.
Ah.
And then did her.
Right there.
There's no mention of whether she had any consent in this. But... He did her.
I mean, consent.
Consent. He's a king.
He's king.
You can't not consent to a king. Yeah. All there is consent.
He gets what he wants.
Yeah. It's good to be the king.
Yeah. I guess so.
Anyway, she gets preggers.
Right.
Lets him know about it.
That's the risk you run.
Right. And since her hubby was out of town fighting his war, he knows he's in trouble. Whatever trouble a king can get into. So he calls her hubby back into the city.
Right.
Says, hey, welcome back. Tell me how's the war going? good. Why don't you go back to your house and see what's happening over there? Assuming, of course, that he would go back to his house and have relations with his wife.
Yeah.
And then there's plausible deniability and sure. like, oh, you got her pregnant.
Right.
Guy won't go to have relations with his wife. He's like, you know what? My fellas out there at the war can't have their relations. They don't get a comfortable bed in their thing.
Wow.
So he doesn't do it. Which
wow, he sounds like a good guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Or their relationship was on the rocks.
Yeah, maybe he's asexual. Who knows? But he doesn't
he
do it.
He wanted to get back to the boys. He wasn't asexual.
He knew.
Maybe he's that kind of sexual. Anyway, he doesn't screw his wife. So David sends word with him. How messed up is this? Gives him a letter to give to his commanding officer that says, hey, send this guy out to the worst part of the war, to the most intractable front, and then back off of him.
Ugh.
To get him killed. Like, it's very, like, he specifically says, we're going to kill this guy in the war so wow. that I don't have to deal with this.
He's kind of a douche.
This happens, and then, douche that he is, he just grabs Bathsheba and marries her as one of his wives. He's already got a bunch of wives. He just marries Bathsheba, too.
Yeah.
Because,
you know. It's good to be king.
She looks good in a bath. What can you say?
Yeah.
That's what
I look for.
So, yeah, he's a terrible guy.
Yeah.
This was terrible. Now, the Lord did say he's a man after my own heart, in part because he was called to repentance by a guy and repented.
Oh, did he not?
And felt mournful about what he had done.
So this story got out. People knew.
I guess, yeah.
I mean, because, I mean, the story is being told.
Yeah. The prophet Nathan is the one who confronted him with his sin.
Oh, my God.
And David actually did what wouldn't be, what no human being on this earth can imagine Donald Trump doing, which is he contritely looked inward and said, oh, fuck, that was bad.
Right.
And he begged for God's forgiveness and he wept and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, my. I bet we see that. I bet we get a Donald Trump moment.
where he looks inward and
like, Father, please. We have the the evangelical minister who was like,
that was,
Father, I have sinned against
you. That was Jim Baker.
No.
Jim and Tammy Faye. Remember, Jim went to jail.
No, I know that, but there was another guy who
I know who you're thinking of.
He was a big preacher type, not a televangelist.
Yeah.
And he's,
no, Father, forgive me if I have sinned against thee.
Who was that?
I can't remember. Anyway, we can move on. That's not
the letter S jumps to my mind, but I can't think of who it would have been. Anyway.
We can move on.
We can move on. Here's the thing. So you get a lot of people. A lot of people caught on to the compare Donald Trump to David thing. So then the theory, the story becomes, obviously we know he's not perfect, but the Lord sometimes uses imperfect people for perfect things. For good things.
Oh, yeah. No, that's like one of his really good tricks.
Yeah. Yeah. And as a matter, so then people glommed onto it, including a very famous moment where Rick Perry, who was his rival for the presidency and then like didn't get the nomination and then now is the Secretary of Energy.
Yes, that is correct.
And as Secretary of Energy was asked to defend Donald Trump and used the David thing, but clearly didn't really know the David story. So he basically he bailed on his quote really fast. He was like, yeah, you know, David was not a great guy.
Yeah.
Here, do you have the quote?
I have it right here. I tell people from time to time, you know, the good Lord used King David the best I can tell. King David wasn't perfect either, but he was the chosen man of God. Let's go make America great again.
Which is basically the equivalent of, I don't remember this story. I shouldn't have started saying this. Let's move on really quickly.
Let's make America great again.
Make America great again. Maga, maga, maga. Baba booey, baba booey. Hang up.
I love it.
Yeah. So, but David's not the only comparison that people have been trying to make to make Donald Trump a biblical figure. Because a lot of people noticed that Trump didn't really know what he was talking about with the Bible. So the evangelicals can't make him a godly man.
Right.
Some of them. Some of them do. Some of them claim he's a godly man. Others are like, but it's okay that he's not godly. He's not one of us.
Right.
Because he's like King
Cyrus.
Cyrus.
Yeah.
That name just suddenly left me.
Right. The Persian king.
The Persian king.
But he was good to the Jews.
He released them from captivity.
Yeah.
So sometimes God uses a non-godly man to do godly things.
He was benevolent.
Right.
He was an effective governor of his kingdom.
He was the successor to Nebuchadnezzar, who was not nice to the Jews.
Oh, he was a douchebag.
Daniel told him, release the Jews, be nice. And he was like, fuck it, nah.
Yeah.
So Cyrus did the opposite. Cyrus was the good guy.
Yeah.
I think
good
that that's
for him.
It's a very funny thing because...
So there's some Jews that have to be released?
Because it's not like Trump has done anything to be Cyrus yet. Trump
He's
has just...
recognizing Jerusalem.
Oh, well, there is that.
That's pretty good, Dan.
Yeah, maybe he's
That's
a Cyrus
good,
guy.
Dan.
Yeah, I guess so. He's like destabilizing the entire Middle East.
Right.
But he is being nice to Jews.
Yeah.
And for what...
They want to name a train station after him.
Oh, my God. And the Christians just eat that shit up.
I don't know why, but they...
Well, I mean, we have theories as to why.
Right.
Because Christians think that Jerusalem has to... That Jerusalem's where Jesus will come back. So the Jews have to get Jerusalem back again.
Right. Well, now Jesus is going to be taking us high-speed train into Jerusalem, getting off at Trump Station.
Yeah. You know it.
Yeah.
And then wailing at that wall.
Oh, yeah.
He'll be super into it.
Well, the temple will have been rebuilt at that point.
Yeah, all the good things will happen.
Yeah, this is great. Everything's happening. Right according to plan, Dan.
Right.
It's all coming to fruition.
I guess the whole point of our thing is that, like, I mean, we're not the first people to notice that you can use the Bible to justify fucking anything in the world.
Right.
Do you want to use it to justify rape? Go ahead. It's in there. It's sanctioned. You're good.
For sure, yeah.
Unless you're a woman. Obviously, you can't justify anything if you're a woman. But if you're a man...
And also not great to justify rape if you're...
A human?
A woman.
Yeah.
For women. That's a bad thing for women.
And well, I'm saying if a woman starts to rape people, maybe she could justify it from the Bible.
That's terrifying.
Well,
a woman aggressively... I don't know.
The point is, if you want to justify any goddamn thing that comes across,
yeah,
the Bible's there for you.
Oh, it's
the Bible,
such a useful tool.
Will have your back.
Yeah.
So go out there and be as terrible as you want, and you know, just pull out a Bible verse or two.
Yeah.
Find the character that's done the awful thing that you want to do, and that the Bible has not condemned for it, and you'll be in good shape.
Absolutely.
Ladies and gentlemen, your Bible. Hooray. The most important book in the world. All right. Well, if you have anything that you'd like to talk to us, if you've ever seen other people justifying things with the Bible, write into us. Let us know about it. podcast@thankgodimatheist.com.
Or you could call and leave us a voicemail message. The telephone number is 424-666-8442.
Yeah. Go to the Facebook page, facebook.com/TGIAtheist, and click the like button.
And while you're there, search for the TGIA Members Only Lounge. Request to join. Mm-hmm. It's a closed group, but that's what makes it so special.
That's true.
It keeps it a nice discussion.
You can go to the YouTube page and see my red shoes if you go to youtube.com/TGIAtheist.
And
also, we have some folks to thank.
Yes.
Thanks to Mackenzie for all of her amazing work on the Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
And thanks to Danny and Sarah and Amy for their moderating of the Members Only Lounge.
And thanks to the Red Rock Hot Club and Gordon Johnston for the use of their music.
Yes. And thank you, dear friends, for tuning in whatever medium that you do so.
Bye.
Bye-bye.